Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Podcast, Episode 2. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean, from NC Gunblog, and with me today, as always, is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
Better than I deserve. How are you doing?
Pretty tired. It's been a long week, but we're back. Well, we got some big news for our first podcast.
Really?
We have international listeners.
International listeners. That's awesome.
We are big in Sweden. We were downloaded 5 times in Sweden, a country that doesn't even speak our language, and they're downloading us. This is awesome. Thank you to all of our Swedish fans. Other countries include Singapore, Germany, Canada, and China, and of course, all over the United States. We love all of our listeners. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We don't care where you come from. Thank you very much.
And what we'd really like you to do is go to gunblogvarietycast.com/episode2 and leave a comment. Let us know who you are, where you're from, and why you chose to listen to our show.
Let's go straight into the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report.
All right.
Today, well, not today, 2 days ago, is the first anniversary of me starting to record all of the distances that I walk using the Map My Walk app on my smartphone. And total dog walking distance in the last 365, 367 days, I think it is at this point, 1,851.5 miles.
That's a lot. That's like 5 miles a day.
Well, I'm at about 6 miles a day.
Yeah.
3 in the morning, 3 in the night. Poor dog today. She got shorted on her evening walk because I had to hurry to get back. She only got 2 miles.
Why did she get shorted?
Well, because I couldn't be late for you and Aaron.
Oh, well, there's that. Oh, so it's my fault. Okay.
Yep.
Sorry. Sorry.
And my bike riding distance, I obviously didn't ride in the middle of the winter. I walked the dog in the snow and the rain. That didn't stop me. But bike riding, I did left off. Total bike riding for the last 12 months is 1,505.31 miles.
Nice.
What have you been doing for your fitness?
Talked last week, maybe. The room that I run in with the treadmill, the air conditioner went out. Well, I got that fixed. So I ran for the first time in a couple of weeks on Wednesday, and that was not pleasant. So
you're back at the start on the couch to 5K.
So I'm back. I'm perpetually restarting at about 6 weeks.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron. How are you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing fine, Sean. Just like gentlemen like yourself have handkerchiefs and cowboys have bandanas. Well, every prepper needs a little item called a schmog.
A schmog.
Is that like the bad air in Los Angeles?
No, but it's pronounced pretty close to the same. It's an Arabic word. If you want to get really technical, I suppose it would be pronounced schmog, but Americans have blurred it, and now it's just pronounced schmog.
What am I going to do with the schmog?
Well, it really is the Swiss Army knife of clothing. And it's something that every prepper needs. They're about 3.5 feet square. They're usually made of cotton, sometimes a cotton poly blend. And they can do everything that a bandana can do, from serving as a sling to a broken arm. You can filter water. You can wrap stuff up in it like a hobo sack. You can tourniquet a wound. You can wipe your face or other parts of your body with it. You can get it wet and wrap it around your head to keep you cool in the heat, or you can put it over your mouth to filter out smog. It's just got all sorts of uses, from personal hygiene to first aid to comfort. It's an all-around utility item.
Well, something that does all that, that's got to be expensive.
Well, the best part is, not only are they basically weightless, they only weigh about 4 ounces, you can get them for about $10 or less on Amazon. And if you are thrifty like I am, you can get them with free shipping.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So naturally, using the magic of the radio, it's going to be a little bit difficult for you to teach me how to tie one of these things to turn it into all these. I'm pretty sure I can make a sling from. What else? Where can I learn how to tie the things?
Well, in the show notes, there are going to be links to several videos or diagrams on how to tie it. And there are multiple schools of thought on how best to tie them. And so this is sort of like which pistol to use. Each one needs to be tried, and you need to figure out which one suits you, because what fits me isn't going to fit you.
So basically what you're telling me is that go on YouTube, check out all the different ways, try them out. It's all pretty much laid right out for me.
Pretty much. You may have some issues with mirroring it. You know, you're looking at the guy in the video and he's using his right hand, but it's on the left-hand side of the screen. You may have some issue, but just, you know, buy it, practice it, don't be afraid to experiment, and you'll get something that is pretty useful. Now, there are a couple of things you need to know about it. If you've got your schmog wrapped over your mouth and you wear glasses.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah, me too. That is a great way to fog them up.
Ah.
Yeah.
So what do we need to do? What do we need to do to fix that?
Well, you can mitigate it somewhat by breathing through your mouth rather than through your nose. If you're really good at not breathing through your nose, you can untuck it so that your nose is uncovered, and so that way the hot air is not forced upwards over your glasses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if you plan on wearing it outside like most people do, I recommend you put on a ball cap first.
You know, that makes, now that you say that, I remember you see a lot of people overseas that are wearing them, you know, Special Forces guy pictures, they're all wearing a ball cap underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they do that?
The schmog, because it's this floppy piece of fabric, it doesn't really hold its shape. The top cloth will start flopping into your field of vision, and it's really easy to get sort of tunnel vision from the sides. If you got a ball cap on, that brim lends a lot of structure just to how the schmog drapes around your face. You know, the outside curvature of the brim will pull the sides out away from your eyes a bit more. Not only does it keep the schmog in shape, but again, you still may have the utility of a ball cap to keep your eyes in shade.
Oh, okay. Is there anything else I need to keep in mind when I get one of these things?
The final and perhaps most important point is you have to research your colors before you get them, because in the Middle East, the color of the schmog can make a political or national statement, much like, you know, the Scottish tartans. Red is typically Jordanian. Yasser Arafat of the PLO had a white and black schmog.
Yeah, you see, basically every time you see a one of those Palestinian protests, every idiot, you know, digs one of these black and white towels out of his and throws a ring on his head, and yeah.
So it's really important that you not be a dumb Westerner and wear colored schmog without realizing that you're making a political statement. Also, if you are in certain parts of the country with gang presence, I wouldn't get a blue one either, because that's the color of the Crips, and you don't want to be thought of as wearing gang colors. Another good reason to avoid wearing red. My advice would be to get one that's in a tactical color, like olive drab, foliage green, coyote tan.
How about black?
You know, you can get black. My main concern is that if you're using it in a hot environment, it's just going to absorb heat and it's going to make you a lot more uncomfortable. But
that's a good point.
There's nothing politically wrong with wearing a black schmog.
I really like that they're $10. I had no idea that they were that inexpensive. And they only weigh 4 ounces. That makes a whole lot more sense to me now.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought that wrapping your head up, you know, when it's 125 degrees outside is a bad idea, but you know, it sounds like that these don't really trap heat very well.
All right, Aaron, thank you very much. This is another great episode of Blue Collar Prepping. I'm surprised at how cheap schmogs or however she said them were.
Yeah, I'd always said them as shimgas because I can't read.
Yeah, well, you know, we import foreign words and then we mess them up. That's pretty much our specialty. So let's move into my favorite section. Felons behaving badly.
Woohoo!
Charlotte, North Carolina. A man accused of shooting a 10-year-old girl and two police officers in North Charlotte Sunday afternoon has been transferred to the Mecklenburg County Jail and faces 21 charges in the incident.
What a nice guy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Officers were initially called to Kingville Drive around 2 p.m. Sunday afternoon to the report of a domestic incident. The woman called 911 and advised that her boyfriend had tried to attack her. When they arrived, officers could not find the woman who called police. Around 3:24 p.m., officers got a call from the same address saying that a man left a home there firing a shotgun into the neighborhood. One officer was hit by shotgun pellets in his left arm. The other officer suffered a couple of bird shots to the face and elbow. Both were taken to the hospital to be treated for their injuries. Officers say the 10-year-old girl was injured when the shooter, later identified as the suspect, went to the home looking for the woman that lived there. He reportedly shot the girl in the face.
Man, this is... Wow. Everybody's lucky that the guy was using birdshot.
Let's take a look at his Oh, wow. It's worse than I remember. Robbery with a dangerous weapon. Felon Class D. Failure to stop for an accident. Felon Class H. Robbery with a dangerous weapon. Felon Class D. Robbery with a dangerous weapon. Felon Class D. Oh, it gets better. Assault with a deadly weapon. Inflicting serious injury. Felon Class E.
Oh, jeez. So, okay. I see in the article here that they actually called the SWAT team out to come and get him. I think that's a completely appropriate use of a SWAT team, don't you?
You know what? Given what he'd been doing, they could take out an MRAP on that guy.
Well, maybe not that far, but the SWAT team is totally appropriate.
totally appropriate, yes. Charges include 3 counts of attempted murder, 3 counts of assault with a firearm on a law enforcement officer, 2 counts of assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious injury, 2 counts of assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, 6 counts of discharging a firearm into an occupied dwelling, 2 counts of damage to property, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, assault by pointing a gun, and discharging a firearm within the city limits.
Like, I'm really just
under
like flabbergasted by this story.
Yeah. And they're always pointing the finger at you and me. We can't let those crazy fat, with their concealed handgun permits, they're going to cause trouble, and guess who's really causing the trouble? The people who we already know are criminals.
So I would like to point out that the article also says that he served around 8.5 years in prison, and he's 27 years old. Pretty much all of his adult life, he's been in prison.
Yep.
Well, let's go on to something, I don't know, less depressing.
You want less depressing? I've got something a whole lot less depressing. I had a chance to talk with Kevin Baker of The Smallest Minority about the upcoming Blogger Rendezvous in Reno, Nevada. So we have a special guest today, Kevin Baker of Smallest Minority. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you.
Kevin, you wanted to talk to us today about something called the Gun Blogger Rendezvous. I've kind of heard about it. Tell me a little about what is the Gun Blogger Rendezvous.
Gun Blogger Rendezvous is a gathering of gun bloggers and readers and industry people and those of us basically of like mind on the Second Amendment and shooting and guns. It's been going on now. This will be the 9th year. It was originally conceived and carried out by Mike Gallion of Mr. Completely. Mike's had some health problems last year, so he asked me to give him a hand trying to set it up this year. So I'm out trying to spread the word, helping get sponsors and draw in more attendance.
Well, what's going to happen at the Gun Blogger Rendezvous?
Well, it runs 4 days. It's September 4th through the 7th. It's in Reno, Nevada. The hotel is the Silver Legacy. Thursday the 4th is basically the day when people show up. And on Thursday afternoon, we'll be taking a tour of the Shields sporting goods store in Sparks, Nevada, which is huge. I don't know how many people have a Shields nearby, but this place is tremendous. Thursday night, we'll go out and have dinner, and then we'll have basically adult beverages and conversation in the room that they have set up for us that's open basically 24/7 the 4 days of the rendezvous. Friday after breakfast, we'll take a trip out to the Pyramid Valley Shooting Range, and it's basically shoot what you brung. Everybody goes out there with what we've got. You get to shoot other people's stuff. You get to shoot your own stuff. The range goes out to 900 yards.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you've got some long-range stuff, I'll be bringing one of my long-range pistols. I've also got my 458 SOCOM. Won't be shooting that very far.
No, that doesn't strike me as a long-range rifle.
No, but it shoots pretty well out to about 200.
Yeah.
So anyway, you basically just bring what you have and go out and have a good time, throw lead downrange, and go see what everybody else brought. After we get back from the range, everybody's had a chance to clean up. We go out to dinner someplace in the resort, and then we repair back to the hospitality suite and sit around and talk some more. Saturday morning we get up, we'll have a breakfast provided to us again. We'll go out to the range once more, and we will be shooting steel. Mike Gallion is setting up international steel. It's similar to Steel Challenge.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes, it's got a little bit more open rules than Steel Challenge does, but we'll be doing several stages of that. We have an industry partner that's going to come out and demonstrate some of his stuff. He's got some full auto stuff and some suppressed equipment. And then after the range trip, we go back. And Saturday is our pizza dinner, which is provided to us by the National Shooting Sports Foundation. And then we have our raffle.
A raffle?
We have a raffle. We have a lot of great stuff. We have four guns. We have scopes, holographic sights, range bags, assorted other stuff that's all been donated to us by the industry.
So we're not talking like cheap stuff here. We're talking like really good stuff.
No, we're talking really good stuff.
Mm.
The four guns that are being given away, one's a classic Winchester 52 22 automatic rifle, High Point carbine, 9mm.
Oh, those are nice. They're ugly as sin, but boy, they are really nice guns, especially to teach people how to shoot.
One of the guys that came last year ran 1,000 rounds through it before he ever cleaned it. We have a Ruger Mark III Hunter, 5.5 heavy barrel Ruger semi-auto pistol.
Oh, those are great. I love the Ruger Mark IIIs.
It's a beautiful gun. And Osage County Guns gave us a SIG 1911-22.
Ooh, can't go wrong with that. I think my parents have one of those.
Can't go wrong with that. John Moses Browning. We've got a lot of neat stuff. And I've gone home every year with some pretty good stuff, but I've never managed to take a gun home with me. I'd like to do that this year.
Okay, so how much is it going to cost?
The registration fee is $30.
$30, that's it?
That gets you into the pizza dinner and lets you get into the raffle. Raffle tickets are $10 a piece.
Uh-huh.
The other costs are basically for the hotel. So if you're going to be staying three nights, it's single or double occupancy, same price. You're looking at probably, for two people, about $400 to stay three nights, plus your travel to get there. I'm driving.
Driving in, yeah. Reno's not too far from where you live. You live out in Arizona.
It's about 14 hours.
Right. It's a bit of a drive for me. I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, so it's going to be a little bit of a hike. But they do have airplanes that go there.
We had a guy fly in from Cambridge, England, so that was the longest traveler.
You know, if somebody comes in from England, they get the same sort of pat down and everything that search that Americans coming back from Amsterdam get for drugs.
Right.
So who's this benefit?
The money is collected this year for the Honored American Veterans Afield.
Ah, Hava. Those are a nice bunch.
Yep. And they're already heavily supported by the firearms and outdoor industry. So they're heavily on board with us.
Excellent. All right, Kevin, it was great to have you. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you.
The Gun Blogger Rendezvous, remember, is September 4th through September 7th of 2014. This is going to be posted up on Friday, so it'll be next Thursday is when it starts. It'll be in Reno, Nevada. And if you get to go, please let us know how it goes. It sounds like a lot of fun. And say hi to Kevin for us.
I always mean to go, and then I always forget until it's like a week out.
So here's another fun section for you. Strange North Carolina and Tennessee laws. This is where we get to go through the different laws in our various states and compare and contrast how silly they can actually be. This one is one that surprises a lot of people. Did you know that it was a felony to steal pine straw in North Carolina?
A felony to...
You know what pine straw is, right? Yeah, a lot of people don't know what pine straw is.
Grows
you know
on
that
trees?
Stuff that kills... Yeah, see, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Pine straw, we didn't call it that. It was pine needles. It was the stuff that fell on your grass and killed your grass.
Yeah.
They actually use it as ground cover out here in a lot of places, and it's starting to become illegal because it's a fire hazard.
Oh, good.
It's used in enough places as ground cover that what they do is they plant a whole bunch of pine trees, they let the needles fall off, and then they go rake up the needles, bale it, and they sell it to a landscaping company.
Oh, okay.
Larceny of pine needles or pine straw. That's General Statute 14-79.1, larceny of pine straw or pine needles. If any person shall take and carry away, or shall aid in taking or carrying away, any pine needles or pine straw being produced on the land of another person, upon which notices, signs, or posters prohibiting the raking or removal of pine straw and pine needles have been placed in accordance with the provisions of GS 14-159.7, or upon which posted notice have been placed in accordance with provisions of GS 14-159.7, with the intent to steal the pine needles or pine straw, that person shall be guilty of a Class H felony.
The interesting thing I think about that is that the signage is required. So if there's no signage, then I can go and steal all the pine straw that I want, and it's just, I don't even know what that would be. Felony.
Actually,
cleaning
it
up.
Could end up. It depends on how much you take. If it's over $2,000 worth, then it would be felony larceny.
Okay.
But you can understand that. That's $2,000 yeah. worth of stuff.
What's the market on pine straw? Like, how much does it cost?
I don't know. I've never bought any of this stuff. It's a fire hazard. I wouldn't put it anywhere near my house.
Yeah.
14.159.7 is the posting requirements, and it's regulations as to posting property. It basically says the sign needs to be 120 square inches, and they need to be posted conspicuously, not more than 200 yards apart. 10 by 12 sign that says, don't steal my pine straw, and if you steal pine straw, it's a felony.
And it's a 10 by 12 sign every 200 yards. You can't yes. even see that sign at 200 yards or at 100 yards if you're sitting, you know, if you go right in between.
There's two things we can learn about this. One, don't steal pine straw in North Carolina.
Right.
And two, this is what happens when you have a powerful constituency that can get their elected officials to turn what would ordinarily be a fairly minor crime into one that takes away all of your rights.
You know, that seems like that could just be handled by, you know, petty theft or grand larceny if it's...
Yeah, if it gets up to the point where you're stealing $2,000 worth of stuff.
Yeah.
So what's going on in Tennessee? What crazy gun laws you got for me? Crazy laws in general?
So I've got kind of an interesting little law. This one isn't so much crazy as it is just kind of a quirk. So Tennessee is not a open carry state or... Well, I mean, it is, but you have to have a permit. So... If you're going to carry a gun at all in this state, you have to have a carry permit. It's the same carry permit for open carry or for concealed carry. So most people just conceal carry. Now, if you are caught carrying a firearm without a permit, it's like a $2,000 fine and 30 days in jail and whatnot. But this law, it's TCA, Tennessee Code Annotated 39.17.13.22. And it's called defenses. This is defenses for part 13, which is weapons charges. And it says a person shall not be charged with or convicted of a violation under this part if the person possessed, displayed, or employed a handgun in justifiable self-defense or in justifiable defense of another during the commission of a crime in which that person or the person defended was a victim. So what this means is, if you are carrying a gun illegally and you have to shoot someone, they cannot charge you for carrying that handgun illegally.
Wait, I thought this was like weird laws. This is not the awesome laws section.
Right, but this is pretty cool, right? So in Tennessee, if I have a woman that comes to me and says, "Oh my God, my ex is trying to kill me," I can hand her a gun and say, "Just carry this." And if she has to shoot that person, she's totally okay while she's waiting the 90 days for her permit.
Yeah. In North Carolina, they actually have an emergency permitting system, which you'll get it within 24 hours, I think.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. If you've got a serious emergency and you can get you, our sheriff's pretty accessible, you know, second largest county. And I can basically walk into the sheriff's office and talk to him. So we have an expedited process, which is a very good thing here in North Carolina.
Maybe I'll look into getting that implemented here. I got some pull.
You don't have it already?
Good. No, we don't have it. I don't even think it's even occurred to any of our people.
Okay, well, let me remind me, and I will send you a link to what it says in our permitting system, and you can go shop it to your
absolutely
legislators.
I know exactly who I'll send it to.
Well, Miguel wants to talk to us about the other gun control. Well, Miguel, this week you wanted to talk to us about what you call the other gun control. What do you mean by the other gun control?
We know that gun control is not actually about guns. It's about control. So gun control comes in two flavors, in two parts. One is the physical control of the object. You know, the gun, they don't want the guns, rifles, shotguns. Government wants control that you don't have them. It's very restricted. The other part is the part of the mind control. It's what governments and society does to make self-defense a stigma, a sin.
See, now that makes a lot of sense now that you mention it. So the two parts are, let's keep people from having guns by making it difficult to get the gun in the first place legally, and number two, let's make it socially unacceptable for you to use that gun or to defend yourself.
More than just socially unacceptable, making the stigma is something that you are so ashamed to do. Defending yourself, the concept of self-defense is so nasty as view by the rest of society, you avoid it. And that is, comes also in two parts. Number one is the early indoctrination. When they tell you that violence is never the answer, you don't kill, that's a sin. Okay, there's no way, never an excuse to harm somebody else. And, that goes into your psyche since, you're a little kid. There's only one group of people, that's the government, those who have the monopoly of killing.
You see that in the United States a little bit, but you were telling me that that's much, much more prevalent in Latin America. How did that come about?
The colonization of South America went a little bit different than the United States. The United States, were people that were looking to people from England and other parts that came over, and they wanted to be left alone. The space was so huge that, there was no real control from the government in London over the subjects. But in South America, however, it was different. Whoever came to South America were made, you could have been, some to be hoodlum, but if you conquered certain part of the land, and they would give you, you become a duke or a count or whatever, and you were the lord of that area. And if you're on top, you don't want anybody else to knock you down. But eventually, when it comes to modern times, there had to be a way to control people's mind much better, and that was done through the legal system. Most of South America still run on the principle of guilt until proven innocent, even if they in the books they have it the other way around. But, for example, if you happen to have to use a gun or any weapon in self-defense, you have your family, it's 2 in the morning, somebody breaks into your house, you defend yourself and you maim or kill the criminal, get ready because you are about to go into a trip nobody wants. The first thing that's going to happen to you, you can't call the police because you are a responsible citizen. Police comes, it starts taking evidence, take initial statements, and you go detained. You are actually going to be detained. They don't call it an arrest. You are detained and you're taken to jail.
Hey, that happens here in America. They detain you, take you down to the station, ask you some questions. You get a lawyer, and even if they have probable cause and can arrest you, you can just post bail and go home. So what's the big deal?
The wheels of justice in Latin America turn at a very, very slow pace. You can expect to spend between 3 months and a year in jail.
That's insane.
And I've seen it happen more than once. And, and you have to just be patient. Hopefully you get a lawyer. The lawyer's not going to be able to do a whole lot of stuff because the other thing, the police is not the one who's going to investigate you. That is left to the judge, who's also is an investigative judge, sort of like a half prosecutor, half judge. You're not the only case he's got in his platter. So you're going to have a hell of a waiting time until the guy comes around to your case. 6 months, 1 year is not unusual, and you're in jail. Maybe if you're lucky, and if you happen to have a decent bank account and make a certain donations, you get to maybe go home and be arrested at home.
Who's feeding your family? Who's paying your mortgage at this point?
Nobody.
So you're saying that in a lot of cases, it probably would have been better for all concerned if you'd have just been killed.
That's one great observation right there. And it's come to the point that people much rather deal with the criminal on the chance that they're going to be robbed, and that's it. It is done. But with the government, is paralyze your life, will paralyze the life of your family. You and your family are going to go through such a trauma for the simple human right of defending yourself.
What do people in Latin America think when they see Americans who've used lethal force to defend their lives getting treated with respect and sometimes even admiration in our press?
It doesn't compute. I mean, seriously, it is like trying to understand what it is, the seventh dimension is. If you don't leave it, you don't have a concept. That happened to me when I came to the States, and, I'm mindset is still the same, you know, the criminals, whatever, and, you know, avoiding the police, because, you know, most of the time, they were as bad as the criminals and whatnot. So, when I finally clicks on me, it's like, wait a minute, it is my freaking right! I can actually defend myself! You know, somebody's threatening my life, I can use a gun, a baseball bat, a spear, whatever. Defend myself, and they're gonna talk to me, they're gonna take my statement, and they're gonna let me go. What a freaking concept! It is like, you see the videos on YouTube of people that have been deaf all their life and have their cochlear implants put on, and all of a sudden are listening, and the shock that represents for them to listen to the emotion, pretty much the same.
So what you're saying is there's more to it than just simply trying to win the battle of keeping the equipment. We also have to win the moral battle, the one that says, yes, it is appropriate for people to use lethal force in self-defense. And it might be a good idea if we spread those concepts around the world.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, it has to. The United States is unique in that sense. There is a book written by a gentleman named Richard Maxwell Brown. It's called No Duty to Retreat, Violence and Values in the American History and Society. I recommend it. I'm going to put up the links on the website later. It's a book that's written from the gun control side. So be warned on that one. He explains how the United States deviated from what the normal, common, accepted laws of duty to retreat. When a government tells you, okay, you are free to go even when you kill somebody in self-defense, it's not because the government is granting you a pardon, but because it's your God-given right.
It seems to me that a lot of countries didn't free their people so much as move to an elective system of monarchy. Here in America, we've elevated all of our people to the nobility, and we're all free to bear arms and govern ourselves.
Exactly. We are self-governed. That is the great part. The governments outside the United States do not trust their people. They do not trust their citizens.
All right, Miguel, thank you very much.
No problem. Have a great one.
See you next week. I think it's too easy to get caught up in the battle over equipment, and I think we need to put more effort into pushing the morality of self-defense.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in England, it's you can get charged if somebody comes and starts beating you up with a baseball bat and you take the bat from them and, you know, just threaten them with it, you can go to jail. That concept is just completely foreign to us here in America.
Right, and it needs to remain foreign to us. I think one of the things that we can do as Americans that will help the rest of the world is to keep making that argument. The argument that your life is so valuable that somebody who attempts to harm you, someone who attempts to take your life unlawfully, doesn't have the right to live, doesn't have the right to remain unhurt. You have the right to defend your life, even at the cost of the life of another person.
Absolutely. There is such a thing as righteous violence, and that's it.
So, you got some headlines for us in the Fun with Headlines section?
I do. So, we had a very interesting series of incidents last week. We had a tanker truck coming out of a fuel depot, so where they store all the gasoline, and it the guy basically took the corner at like 35 miles an hour in a fully loaded 8,500 gallon tanker truck. So
that worked real well, I bet.
Yeah, that worked out real well for him. So he flipped it, and it eventually caught fire, and 8,500 gallons of gasoline burned in this neighborhood. And then...
Wait, in a neighborhood?
Yes, and there's actually a really funny video, I'll have to put that in the show notes as well, where the gasoline actually drained off and went into the sewer drains. And there's people out there, there's this video of this guy out there, and he's got one of these little like kitchen fire extinguishers, because the drain grate, so the sewer grate, there's like fire coming out of the sewer grate, and then it stops, and he's like, oh, everything must be okay. And then whoosh, and you can actually see a full manhole cover going up. So like, you know, stuff in this neighborhood is like exploding, right? So we had that. And then like 3 days later, we had another tanker truck that was fully loaded that hit a bridge support and caught fire. We think that guy actually had a heart attack because he died in the fire. and it was, you know, 300 yards away from a gas station. And it actually has taken out a portion of I-65 just south of Nashville. So don't drive on that if you're going to do that next week or so. But then, like the next day, we had this one. Tanker truck explodes on I-65 in Alabama, shuts down roadway. Now, all three of these refer to these gas tankers that caught fire as explosions. None of them exploded. Because if they did, there would be a giant smoking hole crater, not just...
Yeah. The Army let me take a class on improvised flame fuel expedients.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let me tell you what you can do with gasoline.
Oh, I'm sure. So yeah, so that's my fun headline of the week. Tanker truck explodes, or maybe just caught fire.
Maybe just tips over, drains all the gasoline, and then sets the sewer on fire.
Yeah.
So Baron Barnett has an interesting story about how one phone app can hijack another and steal your personal and banking data. All right, Baron, you were telling me last week that worrying about Facebook Messenger was just really a waste of time when there are other applications that can do far worse. Do you have an example?
Actually, I do. This past week, a couple researchers actually released a paper where they showed that they could exploit the GUI framework inside of Android to steal logon credentials and photos of checks and things like that from other applications within the system.
The GUI, graphic user interface, you're saying?
Yes, the framework that's required so that I can go and draw a box on the screen, or I can, you know, write text and have a clickable button. That framework that's basically shared among all the applications.
Oh, so you mean you're telling me that these applications, they don't do everything, they just access resources that already exist and then allow them to use that resources in some common ways, and that way when you're writing a program, you don't have to write everything.
Correct, and there's no actual isolation between two different applications using that same framework.
So what you're saying is this is kind of like I'm sitting in the closet and I'm watching what's going on in the room.
That is exactly what's going on.
Well, that's kind of creepy.
It is very, very creepy. The researchers were able to actually successfully steal the logon credentials for Gmail and H&R Block, if I remember right, 92% of the time.
That's not really very nice.
No, it's not very nice at all. And they actually showed video where they were able to steal a picture that was taken using the phone to do like a check deposit. And they
wait a minute. It's stealing pictures. You told me last week that the reason that these applications ask for permission to get to your camera and permission to look in your your saved pictures is because they need that permission to get to them for legitimate reasons. Don't they have it written some way in the application that if it doesn't ask and tell you these permissions are acceptable, that it can't access it?
That's exactly right. The operating system itself prevents the application from going and accessing those resources.
So I just won't give that application permission and problem solved, right?
Well, not so much, because what their test application proved was that they could actually go and use the access another application that's been granted. And so when that application went and took the picture, they immediately took over control of the system and then stole a copy of the picture and sent it to wherever they wanted to send it to.
I don't like that.
Well, that's the wonder of technology.
How are they going to get on my phone in the first place? It's not Facebook Messenger, right? We've established that.
Actually, the number one most important thing you need to do to prevent something like this from getting on your phone or tablet or whatever other device, be fully cognizant and aware of what it is that you're installing on your phone, even if it's from the App Store. One thing that someone could do is create the next Candy Crush Saga, lay all this in the back end, and so it's always running in the background while you're playing your, you know, viral video game, and then when you go and log into your bank, it steals all that information and sends it wherever they want. Basically, the number one most important thing is stick to applications from known reputable vendors.
Now, how does that affect iPhone stuff? Is that different?
They didn't show a demo of it, but they suspect the same exact vulnerability exists because there's no real isolation between applications. They all share that same framework being used. And so if the system has the memory there, theoretically, there's nothing to prevent another application from going and getting it. You've put everything in the same exact room together. You can't really stop them from talking.
I know that with the iPhone, everything has to come through the App Store. I know with the Android, you could accept third-party applications. I never did because I didn't know any third parties that I was willing to accept an application from. And then there was these people that would root their phones. They would, like, so they could delete some of the garbage stuff that was left on their phone by the telephone company. How does that affect things?
Often when you end up rooting a phone, you basically end up allowing third-party applications to come in. And that's actually the number one vector for a lot of this stuff to actually get in the phone. Personally, I don't even bother rooting a phone, mainly because it's not that I can't be cognizant and aware and prevent things from getting on the phone. It's just I don't see a need to do it myself. There were a bunch of vulnerabilities that were listed about Android, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. And when you actually went down and looked at what was happening and what the vulnerabilities were, they all pertained to third-party applications and rooted phones. People were bypassing the security protections that were in place to prevent malicious applications and then complaining when malicious applications were able to get through. So it was kind of ironic that people would go and open up the gate and then act surprised when the horse got out.
So you're saying that I should apply the same rules that I learned in health class back in junior high school? Practice safe phone downloading?
Yes, practice safe phone downloading.
All right, Baron, thanks very much. That sounds very interesting, and I'm going to make sure not to be...
Don't go to the application house if it'll repute. It won't work out well for you.
All right, thanks, Baron. So it sounds like everybody needs to practice some safe phone downloading.
Yeah, that was, I'm glad he made the point that, as long as you get stuff from the stores, it's okay. I've seen a lot of people where they're like, oh, look, I can install this app and I can get all these free movies and free downloads and all this stuff. Yeah, no, don't do that.
Yeah, he did say, though, you shouldn't completely trust things that come in through the store because it's easy to hide things in the back end. Try to stick not only to the stores, but also to well-known providers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If the developer on your application is, Vladimir Zaitsev or whatever, you probably don't want that guy.
Vasily Zaitsev.
Well, yes. But Vasily Zaitsev was actually like a pretty awesome guy. Vladimir Zaitsev, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that guy.
Okay,
right?
I see your point. Oh, so I hear you had a little problem.
So, yeah. So I went to go work on my Ruger 1022 takedown. I bought a new part for it. I was going to put it on there. I haven't touched it since the bidet shoot, which was about 2 months ago. So I go and I pull it out of my safe, and I swear that there are two rusty fingerprints on my barrel.
The horse.
Yes. I was like, oh, I've had this since like January. What happened? It didn't look like this when I put this thing away. So none of the other guns in my safe look like that. I've got a dehumidifier in the safe. So I actually, like, I don't really know what happened there. So do you have any ideas? Does anybody out in the audience have any ideas? I got nothing.
Well, something that I had when I got my first rifle at the age of 15, one of the things that my dad got for me was this silicone impregnated rag, and it went in the rifle sleeve with the rifle. It was in its own plastic bag. But before you put the rifle away, you're supposed to take this silicone impregnated cloth and rub the rifle down to take any fingerprints off. So maybe that's something you should try.
You know, it occurs to me now, that's the only firearm that I own that's blued. Everything else is Parkerized or stainless.
There you go.
So that's probably what it was.
And we should probably point out for our international listeners that, yes, he did in fact say a bidet shoot. Tell us a bit about the bidet shoot so the people who aren't in the gun blogosphere, so they can understand what's going on.
So I blog as WizardPC at gunscarstech.com. I have a co-blogger who blogs as Oddball. And his birthday is in June. And 2 years ago, we decided to go and have a gun blogger shoot for the Southeast United States. We invited a bunch of people. And in the email thread, he started calling it his birthday shoot, and then somebody called it a B-day shoot, and then somebody said it was a bidet shoot. So Lucky Gunner actually sent us a bidet, and we shot it with a 50 cal.
And a bidet is, for those who don't know, a toilet-like device that is for washing your backside after pooping.
Yes.
Not very popular in the United States, but is used overseas. So you overseas listeners hearing us say bidet shoot, yes, that's what we're talking about.
That's exactly what we're talking about. There's a video
of it.
So we
took a great big... Well, it's not we. I didn't get to go. But you got a piece of porcelain and you shot it with a really big gun and blew it apart.
Yep.
That has got to be fun.
Oh, man, it was great.
Way more fun than shooting cars. Nothing happens when you shoot cars. You just put holes in it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm starting something new.
What's that?
The Quest... for Sharpshooter.
Is that a game?
No. Quest for Sharpshooter. Actually kind of riffing on something that a guy named Caleb, I'm not sure if he started that when he was still at Call Me Ahab or whatever it was.
I think it was at the very beginning of Gun Nuts.
He now blogs at Gun Nuts Media, but he wanted to be a masterclass IDPA shooter in all of the different disciplines. So what do they call them? Classes? ESP, SSP, ESR, yes. SSR, yes. He wanted to be masterclass in all six that are available. I want to be sharpshooter in just one.
It's a lofty goal.
Yeah, lofty goal. Yes, that is true. I'd like to stick to a goal that is somewhat achievable. I did my first IDPA shoot, and I've shot USPSA before, which is a much more wide open, easier rule set. IDPA costs a lot less because you're not shooting nearly as much ammunition, but it's a much more restrictive rule set. So I would like to be, let's see, it's unclassified, then it's
novice,
marksman. Oh, novice, then marksman, then sharpshooter. Above sharpshooter is expert. Above expert is master.
Yes, I think that's how that goes.
So I need to, what I'm planning on doing is taking, the pistol that I've got, an XD45, and shooting that in enhanced service pistol. It has to be ESP because I have an extended mag release on it. And I am going to practice until I get to be a sharpshooter. I'm going to shoot one IDPA shoot every month. I'm going to do some dry firing. The guys at Triangle Tactical, Luke and Ben, have both kindly offered to give me some coaching. I'm going to be going to some IDPA shoots with them. And that's how I'm going to, we'll see how it goes.
Good deal. Now, I've been shooting IDPA for a couple of years, and I have always had the same four goals every time I go. Don't shoot anybody else. Don't get shot. Don't get disqualified. Don't come in last. Your goal is much, much better than mine.
Well, what I'd really like, I've been wanting to change over to a 9mm pistol. I just don't, I can't prioritize the money to buy a new gun. So, if anybody out there would like to sponsor me, send me some ammunition and the goal of Sean becoming a sharpshooter in IDPA, and I would be perfectly happy with a Glock 19 or that really cool Walther PPQ that I was playing with. We'd see if that works. A couple thousand rounds of ammunition, I'd be good. I could probably do this in a year.
All right. Well, good luck.
I don't think that's going to go very well, do you think?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe somebody, maybe the Walther guys would be like, what the heck?
Hey, if you don't ask.
Yeah. Well, the latest push from gun grabbers is the guns and alcohol don't mix. Let's talk to Weird on that subject. Well, welcome back to the show, Weird. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Weird, we're hearing a lot of complaining from the usual anti-gun suspects about the possibility that the Texas ABC Commission might start allowing beer sales at gun shows. They can't be really concerned that your average Texan will get tanked up on beer and start shooting up the gun show. So what are they really concerned about?
Well, they're just concerned about people owning guns, and they're looking for any angle possible to make sure that people either can't own guns or can't exercise their right to carry.
But Weird, we all know that guns and alcohol don't mix.
Well, to some extent that's true. I mean, first up, you can drop your gun into a glass of scotch and it's not going to immediately dissolve, but and of course also let's be honest, we're going to be talking about guns and alcohol here, and it is not a good idea to be in an impaired state when you're handling your firearms or carrying or shooting at the range or even cleaning your guns. But, you know, let's face it. This is not some sort of bizarre all-or-nothing statement of the, if you're anywhere where you can smell somebody opening a beer, that you're immediately going to be turned into a homicidal maniac.
That really bothered me about here in North Carolina. For the longest time, you weren't allowed to carry in a restaurant that serves alcohol. You know, I used to tell people, I can carry in a Golden Corral, but not a Lone Star. I'm safe, sane, and sober in one place, but the minute I get within smelling distance of a beer, I'm a clear and present danger.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, someone like me, I am extremely cheap, and I do not like buying alcohol when I'm at restaurants. Every so often, I'll have a beer or something like that. But overall, no, I'm not going to pay $8 for a mixed drink when I'm at a restaurant, when I can just go home and mix one up myself.
So in most states, I mean, like literally most states, it's legal to go into an establishment that serves alcohol while armed. Have we seen the blood in the streets?
Oh, no. It's been, it's been in many places, it's been legal forever. And there's some states even don't have any real laws at all when it comes to that. I mean, overall, I think most states have a law about being completely intoxicated, you know, above the legal limit of alcohol while operating or carrying a firearm. But as a general rule, a lot of states, you know, really don't concern themselves too much about that.
It's not actually illegal in Pennsylvania. You can get as blissed as you like. Do they have a huge crime rate, do you think?
Oddly enough, no.
No, they don't have drunken people shooting up bars all day and every day?
Nope.
So it sounds to me like, once again, they're arguing in bad faith. They're just trying to make it as difficult as possible for gun owners.
Or they're just trying to drum up a lot of fear. Just trying to say, you know, it may not actually be happening, but if they can twist someone's ear enough to get them to think that, oh yeah, these people are getting completely blitzed on booze and they've got guns on them, and next thing you know, someone's going to look at them cross-eyed, and man, it's just so easy just to pull out a gun and just start blasting away.
Have you ever wondered what goes on in these people's heads if they look at the rest of the world, all the people that surround them, and say, oh, they're one beer away from snapping and pulling out a gun and killing people? What kind of sense does that make?
Yeah, no, I try to get inside their head, but honestly speaking, it just doesn't work. As much as this anti-gun stuff that I read and blog about, I can't get inside their head. I've got to imagine that a large portion of them are being completely dishonest. They know it's a non-issue, but at the same time, they're looking for anything they can get a foothold on.
Here's the question they're going to ask. What are you doing at a bar? Why are you at a bar? You drink at a bar. Why would you go to a bar and carry a gun? You're going to get drunk in the bar, right?
Not necessarily.
Oh, why would you go to a bar and not drink?
Maybe you're going there to meet friends. Maybe you're going there to see a band. Maybe you're going there for a lovely cheeseburger.
And maybe you're the designated driver?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I've done that with Linoge. Linoge and his wife and my wife, we went to a brew pub, and I was the designated driver, designated carrier.
Yep, well, that works out very, very, very well. And I find that when I'm carrying, it makes that's very, very easy decision to make.
I don't understand how the Women's Christian Temperance Union has suddenly morphed into a bunch of gun control nuts. Are they the same people? What's going on here? Seems to me that if I'm legal to get into a 2-ton missile, my car, and hurl myself down the highway at 70 miles an hour, I should be legal to carry a gun while I'm doing it. Why is this zero tolerance being applied to people just because they want to carry a gun?
No, I concur with that. I mean, there's definitely many states where they have a law where you can carry in an establishment that serves alcohol, but you are not allowed to imbibe anything at all. But meanwhile, I can, you know, go into a place if I'm not armed, drink a beer, and then immediately pay my tab and step out, hop into my car, and drive wherever the heck I'm going. And that's, no one's going to frown on that. I'm not drunk. I'm not even impaired. But for some, you know, for some strange reason, just that little whiff of beer is, I don't know what.
I think you're right, Weird. I don't think it has anything to do with the beer. I don't think it has anything to do with fears that you're going to get drunk. I think what it is let's put up as many roadblocks as we can between ordinary people and their own self-defense. Let's just make it too difficult for them to actually defend themselves, and maybe they just will stop.
Yeah, or let's you know, again, put that whole other label on the gun owners and say, well, no, we can't let these people behave in that such a way, and they'll be causing problems and all of that, even though we are fine to do whatever dangerous activities we do, but guns are different because guns are different.
Yeah, I think that this goes right along with something that Miguel was talking about during his section, and that there's two parts to gun control. One, trying to keep the physical control of the guns, trying to make it as difficult as legally possible to get the guns. And number two, try to make it as socially difficult to have anything to do with firearms. I think this is just another aspect of that.
Yeah, no, they try to make gun owners as different from the regular population as possible. And that's a simple way to get new gun owner people that might be interested in owning guns or getting into shooting go, eh, maybe I won't do that, and to limit the ability for people to do that. I mean, I know for a fact that when North Carolina had their limits on carrying in establishments to carry alcohol, I would go down and visit friends in North Carolina. I wouldn't even bring my guns with me because there were so many different places in that state where I would suddenly become a felon just for crossing the threshold. I just left my guns at home because I'm like, no, I'm not gonna do that. And my friends down in North Carolina that I usually am visiting aren't gun owners, so therefore they're not thinking like I am.
Yep, I think that that's exactly correct. As a person who worked the recruitment table for Grassroots North Carolina here in at the gun shows, I don't know how many times I heard, oh, I'd get my concealed handgun permit, but you know, I can't carry anywhere, so I can't carry when I'm eating dinner with my family, so I'm just not going to bother.
Yeah, it was a big issue that I had. I actually, my wife and I contemplated moving down to North Carolina because the biotech industry is full of such luscious jobs and the cost of living is so much lower down there. But at that time you had all these laws in place, and it was one of those, like, it's so often that I'll be, you know, my wife and I'll be driving home and we'll go, you know what, I don't feel like cooking dinner tonight. Let's go stop at a restaurant. And a lot of restaurants serve alcohol, and in Massachusetts, that's 100% legal, and now it's legal in North Carolina, but it wasn't back then.
All right, Weird. It was great talking to you, and I'll see you again next week.
All right.
I think it's time we push back against these gun grabbers on this issue. It's not an all or nothing, a zero tolerance. I mean, don't get drunk and stupid, but let's not pretend that one beer is going to turn the average gun owner into a violent lunatic.
Yeah, we went through that here in Tennessee a couple of years ago, where for the longest time, you couldn't have a firearm in the same space that where alcohol was sold, and then we got it changed to where you couldn't have it. So like, you couldn't go into a gas station because they sold beer.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding me. Oh,
that's so stupid. Yeah. That's dumber than it was here.
Yeah. Well, now it's only posted properties, but you cannot have any alcohol in your system at all.
Yeah, same thing here in North Carolina. And see, I came in from Pennsylvania. That's where I got my license to carry firearms. That's what they call their permit up in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, you can get drunk. You can get completely blitzed. And you know what they want? Don't drive.
Well, that's good.
If you're blitzed,
yeah,
and you're carrying a gun, please don't drive. That's Pennsylvania's rule.
And it's not a bloodbath up there.
Amazingly enough, there's not a whole bunch of drunken concealed handgun permitters, you know, permit holders or licensed to carry firearm holders, I should say, running around shooting each other.
So I think that you guys went through this relatively quickly after we did. But one of the things was, you know, oh, well, if we allow this and you know, they kept calling it guns and bars. If we allow guns and bars, then, you know, no one is going to ever come to our state. You know, Nashville, it's a big tourism town. No one's ever going to come to Nashville or Memphis because there's, you know, guns and bars. And so you had to ask those people, okay, name one of the other states where you can take a gun in a bar. So you actually don't know the laws in other states? Then how do
you mean all of them?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was like, yeah, we were like 37. Blood, you know? You guys were like number 39.
I think it was, if you look at the map, I think it's like, pretty much nobody left. If you could carry, you can carry in a restaurant that serves alcohol now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there's like Louisiana, I think, is like the holdout.
Yeah. I mean, of all places. You know, it was just ridiculous. The whole thing. And I still don't think that the people that were so vehemently against it, I don't think that they've, you know, reconsidered their position.
They're not arguing in good faith. They're throwing up whatever they can against the wall and seeing if something will stick. The reality is, if you have a beer, it doesn't change your personality. If you're a jack, you're a jack when you're drunk. If you're not when you get a few beers, and you're not going to do those things. And you know what? You're 21 years old before you can even get a concealed handgun permit in this state. You've had plenty of time to prove what kind of person you are. People don't just wake up one day and decide, I'm going to be a violent jerk. It's something that they work up to. So you got plenty of time to look and see in their past, hey, what kind of person are they? Well, they haven't done anything stupid yet. They're probably not going to do anything that bad.
So I have a fun epilogue to our guns and bars law. So the guy who pushed it through the House about 6 or 8 months after it went into effect, he was out at dinner or whatever, had a beer. Apparently, somebody who was not a big fan of his saw him, saw that he was drinking, knew that he was the sponsor of this legislation, so called the police and said that he was driving drunk. The police pulled him over. He blew a .2, I think, which is, you know, way, way under the legal limit. I mean, that's like...
That's a quarter of the limit.
You know, I had Scope mouthwash before I, you know, blew into the breathalyzer, right? So didn't get a DUI, but there is no lower limit for the alcohol level in your system if you're carrying a handgun. It's under the influence if it's 0.001.
Yeah, same thing here. If the police officer smells it on your breath, you're going to lose your CHP.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to get in trouble. I think it's a class two misdemeanor.
Yeah. So this guy lost his carry permit for, I think, 3 years. And he's the guy that authored their legislation. You know, if he doesn't understand the law, how can you and I?
Yeah, seriously. All right, speaking of stuff that grinds my gears.
Go ahead.
People who use four-way flashers during rainstorms.
Really?
If I find the person, you know how they always have like the first person that spreads the infection, they call him patient zero?
Yes, yes.
If I find patient zero for this stupid four-way flasher garbage, I'm going to kick his butt all the way up around his neck. That is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Let's be clear what four-way flashers are for. One, I have an emergency. Look at me. Two, I am driving radically below the speed of the flow of traffic, and you need to pay attention to me, so I'm going to turn on these blinky lights so that you go around me. That's all they're for.
Right.
They don't do anything else.
So...
if you're driving a semi-truck and you're going up the hill, you're putting up the hill, putt, and you're below 45 miles an hour and it's a 65 zone, yeah, turn on them flashers. But if you're putting up the hill at 45 miles an hour and every single other person on the highway is doing 45 miles an hour, why would you turn on your flashers?
Yeah, I don't know.
You wouldn't do that.
No.
Okay, so by the same token, if you're bombing down the highway at 5 miles an hour over the speed limit and it's raining, turn them flashers off. All you're doing is giving me a headache.
So that must be a regional thing because that doesn't happen here. I've never heard about that.
Well, maybe Tennessee has a policy of, you know, which I think would be a very enlightened policy that says it's okay to drop a JDAM on people who do that sort of stuff.
Oh, no. I have seen it when the rain gets so heavy that you can't see 20 feet. And I think that's probably appropriate.
That would be appropriate. But see, when you're going down the highway at basically the speed limit, you're not going under the speed limit. Oh, well, you know, it's really raining hard and it's maybe I need to make sure everybody can see me. Guess what? I can see you. If I can't see you, I'd slow down some. I wouldn't be doing the speed limit. You know, if you're going to be doing a lot slower than me and I can get around you, hey, I don't care what you do. But if I got to sit and stare at your hind end at speed on the highway in the flashing light, you know, with flashing lights in the rain, you have no idea how much I want to choke you. So stop it. Stop it.
So that's a pretty good segue into mine because they're very, very similar. The thing that really grinds my gears is people who run a stop sign or a red light to get in front of you and then go 5 to 15 miles an hour below the posted speed limit. They're really in a hurry to get in front of you, but that's it. This happens to me probably twice a week at a particular intersection. So I drive back roads to work. It's all, two-lane, double yellow line the whole way, and it's about 18 mm-hmm. miles. So if I get behind somebody who's going 35 in the 50... I'm stuck there, right? So it really, really makes me mad when I'm cruising along at 50 and, you know, I see a guy pull out and I'm like, oh, okay, he's, you know, 300 yards away. That's pretty fine. That's, that's awesome. And then the guy right behind him goes two, and then the third guy is going to go 35 miles an hour all the way to the interstate the next 15 miles. Ugh. Makes me really glad
well,
I have giant
bumpers.
Well,
you're carrying
a gun, right? Two. Yeah.
Two guns. So naturally, you pull up next to him and you shoot him, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens when you carry a gun.
See,
you're just so violent because the mind control race of those guns, they force you to do horrible, evil, rotten things.
I really have to send my stuff back to the factory because my mind control rays are just really not working. Oh, well.
Once again, I guess we find that the gun grabbers are wrong. If we were as violent as they thought we were, None of them would exist.
Exactly.
Well, that's our show for the week. Show notes for this episode can be found at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode2. I want to thank Rob Allen for our music, and thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 2. Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at seansorrentino.com, and send all your hate mail to WizardPC at gunscarstech.com.
Yeah, and if you're one of those folks, then please go ahead and comment on this episode. This is episode number 2. And we'd love to hear from you, hear more about you. Why'd you pick our show?
And what we really want you to do is stop beating on the table.
Okay, I'll redo that. I'll do that again.
Kevin Baker talked with us about the Gun Blogger Rendezvous. See, I'll just decide what parts of that sounded like and I'll delete them.
I know, right? Magic of, magic of editing. So
the magic of this not being live.
I don't remember.
Before we come back from that, I need to open up my stuff that grinds my... No, I don't. I can talk about that one off the top of my head. Stuff that grinds my gears, because I'm going to rant. You know, if you want to chime in with it, can I get an amen? You know,
yeah.
Something like that. I don't care. Oh, because I'm going to go off. I hate these people. God, you have no idea how fucking mad these people make me.